You may think that you've had the world's strongest coffee, but unless you've had the electric chair blend from Reaper's Brew, well then, my friend, you have not had the world's strongest coffee. There have been days where I needed the energy and motivation to get going, whether it was to work on my podcast or just be productive in general, and Reaper's Brew coffee definitely did wonders for me. To get some Reaper's Brew coffee for yourself, just go to reapersbrew.com and receive 10% off of your first order when you enter in the coupon code UNKNOWNPOD. Again, visit reapersbrew.com and enter in the coupon code UNKNOWNPOD at checkout for 10% off of your first order. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another special episode of the Still Unknown podcast. I am your host, Joe Schwartz, and I am joined once again for an Unsolved Mysteries recap with the ladies of Resolved Mysteries. And it's a little different this time. We have Carlin again, but this time we have Allison joining us.
Ooh.
Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
And Eliza isn't joining us this time. I can never get all three of you together.
No.
Difficult to wrangle. We're much like a herd of cats.
I mean, we are an unsolved mystery, the three of us, inherently. You'll never see us together at the same time.
Are there three of us?
Are there? Or are there two and a half of us pretending to be a third? You'll never know.
I do know, but
he's like, I've actually seen all of you, so.
He's like, I know you guys.
No mystery here.
All right. So, but Eliza is with us in spirit.
Yes.
So, welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, when I had Carlin and Eliza on last time, I already made the deal we were going to do it for Volume 2, whenever Volume 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And Allison, I'm glad I got you this time because I don't know if you listened to the previous one, but
I don't know if I did.
for those of you who maybe did listen to our recap of Volume 1, I asked Carlin and Eliza to imitate the Dad's Mad Kid.
Oh, Dad's Mad.
Gotta have a Dad's Mad in there.
Dad's gonna be mad.
Wow, really twist her arm, you know? Really had to drag it out of her.
It's like always brimming at the surface. I go on a job interview and I'm like, what? Yeah, no, I'm totally qualified. Dad's gonna be mad.
Part of me always wondered if that was that real kid's voice or if he tried other voices. Like if he talked like a normal kid, like, hey, all right, little Timmy.
Well, it's really interesting that like the longer we go on working with Unsolved Mysteries, the more we find out how hard they worked to keep the reenactments as realistic as possible. So I don't know. Was someone there saying, go lower?
know that voice isn't froggy enough?
Going to be milk?
Well, maybe
don't throw it away. I don't know.
I want to think that kid made that choice himself, but he tried like other avenues. Like, all right, Timmy, can you say dad's inside? He wants you to get inside. He's mad. Okay. And he tries something else, like, you better get inside.
Or maybe it was a young Jim Carrey who took direction really well, and we just don't know.
Oh man, yeah, it was an artistic choice. Sword. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's delightful. I'll always do a dad's gonna be mad. Oh my gosh.
Dad's mad. All right, now that we got that out of the way, so talking about volume 2 of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix.
Yes.
What was your reaction, overall thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so we were kind of talking about, like, I don't know, Joe, if you have a favorite between the two installments so far, the first 6 or the second 6.
I think I might have enjoyed the second 6 more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the second six had, I was more drawn in.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Allison, you kind of enjoyed the first installment more.
You know, I did initially, also, you know, I'm just reactionary in everything I experience. So uh-huh. I either love it or hate it. The first installment was so exciting that mm-hmm. I was willing to, I think, forgive a lot. And then with the second installment, I came at a more critical eye. But, you know, now that we've reflected on it and talked about it a little bit, I think the second installment was really good too. Mm-hmm. I just think that the like magic and the enthusiasm of volume 1, you can't recreate. You know, we were just like, can't believe they're doing this again. For people yeah. like us who love yeah. this so much, you know, they could have been like, who pooped on the floor? And I would have been like, who knows? I don't know. You know, like, it would have been a mystery. Yeah. So initially, the second volume, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. But I think now it's hard. You know, there's really great stories from both volumes. They're mm-hmm. both really good.
Yeah.
A lot of fun stuff.
I do think it's really cool that we have 2 international stories in this second installment.
Yeah. And I do, you know, Carlin and I talked about this, but the tsunami episode was just, it was amazing. You know,
it was, amazing. I appreciated that one, but I did enjoy that one, but part of it was a letdown because it wasn't at all scary,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. You know, in the previews I've seen, they made it look like it might have been more scary. Like,
I agree.
I remember the part they showed in the preview was where they're sitting at the dinner table and then that toy truck turns on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another shot of like a silhouette forming in the curtains. And so it gave off the impression that it was going to be a little bit more on par with the original as far as like giving you chills. But for the most, I mean, I did enjoy like the, like learning about that culture and
yeah.
how they view, the dead and
yeah
yes yeah
so I did appreciate that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and we can talk about it in more detail when we get through each one.
Yeah so that maybe we'll start at the first one and then we can loop back to that one.
Now I've only had time to watch all the episodes once. I was going to try to watch them again. I just didn't have time.
Yeah. That's what I said, and like for most normal people, that would be okay.
Yeah, I watched through 2.5 a second time. I want to finish a second watch through.
Yeah, but so I remember certain episodes better than others.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go ahead and start at the beginning the first episode was Washington Insider Murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is...
Jack Wheeler.
Now, do you remember this story being in the news at the time it happened?
No. Eliza said that she remembered it, but we didn't know anything about it.
No.
Yeah, I wanted to think it sounded familiar, but yeah, I couldn't quite remember it either.
Mm-hmm. No. Now, I can't imagine how a Delaware story would get to Ohio, Pars Unknown, New York, Oregon. Yeah. Like, none of that.
If he worked in like certain if he was a key figure in different administrations, I know he was he worked with Reagan, he worked with like H.W. Bush and W. Bush. Did he work with both Bushes?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes. Okay. He worked with Reagan and the first Bush. I don't know what he did for the second Bush, but yes. He also was a proponent of recognizing prisoners of war for the Vietnam War. People thought he might have been pushing buttons, because that's still hotly contested, whether or not we brought all those POWs home and whether or not we recognize the fact that we haven't. So that was an underlying governmental aspect.
As they said in the episode, he was a real instrumental part in getting the Vietnam War Memorial built.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was, you know, when a lot of people came home from Vietnam, they were met with people that didn't respect what they had done. And he was one of the higher ups that, you know, said, we have to acknowledge these soldiers. And yeah, he took that head. So I guess even from his, like, from the infancy of his role in politics, it was controversial in the way that he was highlighting these people that were lost in the Vietnam War.
The thing that stands out about this case, it's a big case where there is creepy surveillance video his final, what was going on in his final hours. And I put the question on Facebook this morning in a local chapter of Murderinos on Facebook, Akron, Ohio Murderinos. And asked if anyone who watched Volume 2, if they wanted to share their thoughts. I got two responses.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is about this first episode from Faith J. Says, I don't have any organized podcastable thoughts on it, but that first episode really got me. I have a parking garage phobia. Traffic, tight spaces, poor lighting, losing my car, getting lost, everything about them. And that poor man and his poor family, I would really like to see it solved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a I think everyone understands the fear of being in an empty parking garage, fumbling for your keys, just trying to get to your car.
It's so scary.
It's really isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that everyone can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember being in the car with my dad going into a parking garage. He's made the comment a couple of times that every time we go in, like, he asked me, like, Joe, don't, every time you go into one of these, don't you feel like you're in some thriller movie or a horror movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's very creepy. Even the experience of not being able to find your car. I had a night like that once in downtown Portland, and I literally wandered for about 2 hours in the dark.
Do you remember when we went to go see?
Oh my God, yes. That's happened to Allison.
What did we see? Alabama Shakes or something? Mm-hmm. Where we were like, we left our car right here.
Yeah.
Like, but it was like up and over in a field that looked exactly the same way.
Yep.
It's terrifying to be like, will I ever get home? And this is in the comfort of your own. I can always call someone.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you're in the middle of a manic episode, you're not going to think about that. You know, you're not going to think the best way. Yeah. Parking garages. I always think of Candyman, the first Candyman movie. There's a scene. I was like, 11 the first time I saw that movie, and there's a scene of Virginia Madsen is trying to get into her car, and like clearly someone is coming for her, and I remember being really young and just yelling, just get in the car, you know, like, and she's scrambling for her keys and you're like, just no, you know, yes. Like the frenzy and the isolation of being in a location like that, like yeah
I had a parking garage experience where me and a friend were in Cleveland, went to a Cleveland Indians game one night. And it was a thing after the game where they were having fireworks. And we're like, we don't give a shit. So we don't care about fireworks. So we're going to like go back to our car, try to beat most of the traffic. Mm-hmm. And we had parked in this parking garage that has that one level, one end of the parking garage has an entrance right into the stadium. So that's the way we had come in. And we tried to go back out that way. And that ramp was blocked off. So they're like, you have to go this other way. So we got totally turned around. And then we couldn't find... I thought we were on another level when where we had parked. And so we walked around for like half hour, 45 minutes trying to find the car. And we were freaking out. Like, we were like, did the car get stolen?
Yeah. You start to wonder, is the car even there? Like,
yeah.
It's so, scary and frustrating. And to not have your phone on top of it, really scary.
Unfortunately, this is like one of the episodes I don't have too many. I don't remember everything about. I know there was the theory because he ended up in the landfill. Did they say he fell asleep in a dumpster or went to sleep in a dumpster?
Oh, we don't know.
Yeah, so that's a theory that he fell asleep in there. But he, of course, another theory is that he was put in there.
Yeah.
And of course, his behavior on the surveillance video is what makes this case all the more intriguing.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like I think of Elisa Lam.
That's exactly what I said. Immediately thought of Elisa Lam because they were both bipolar and they both were creeping around in this way that they were acting like someone might have been following them or that they were suspicious of something, acting bizarre, ducking behind things. So definitely compare those two.
Yeah. In the case of Elisa Lam, I don't think anyone was after her. I think like her death was an accident. Like she climbed into that herself and it was an accident. So
agree. I think she was having an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't feel like that with Jack Wheeler?
I don't.
So he ultimately died of a heart attack. So he had suffered blunt force trauma to his body, but ultimately also had a heart attack.
Which they did not tell us on UM.
And I am wondering, I truly believe that this case could be solved if we knew whether or not the trash that was picked up was compacted. Because the injuries to his body then could have been that he was compacted.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do feel like it could be that simple though.
Yeah,
I mean, it was very clear that he was, I don't, even with Elisa Lam, it looked like she was running from someone. But in the video of Jack Wheeler, it doesn't, it looks like he's confused and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look as like violently alarmist as the way Elisa Lam looked, looking around, running around. Also, there's an age discrepancy that we might need to discuss, that, you know, Jack Wheeler was a lot older than Elisa Lam. I don't know. I feel like there's not a lot of mystery there. I think that Jack was in the middle of something, and I think that he got into that dumpster, and the best way to figure out what happened was to know whether or not they compacted that trash.
So you don't feel there's foul play?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm a little torn just because of the way they said that the injuries was more like someone who had been like knocked to their knees and beaten up than, I don't know. I just feel like they would have brought that point up, but you make a good point that they did not tell us.
Yeah.
Well, you did an episode on your Patreon where you dive into the Rave of Error case.
Mm-hmm.
And
turns out I was so wrong.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I just read an interview with Terry Dunn Muir about her favorite unsolved mystery case is Ray Rivera. She stood where he was supposed to jump from. She doesn't believe that he jumped from there. She is like, I feel like I'm the dummy for taking the path of least resistance. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll send you the article. It's alarming, but I don't know what to do about it.
I think I did read that.
Yeah. She says it's one of her favorite, and she is the original co-producer of Unsolved Mysteries. It's one of her favorite Unsolved Mysteries. She truly believes she stood on that ledge, and she does not believe that Ray jumped from there. She doesn't know how his body got to that room, but she doesn't believe that he jumped.
Yeah, that was the experience of our listener who went there and took photos for us. He was like, from looking at it from here, it really doesn't seem possible.
Yeah. So I don't think that I can give an educated opinion on anything.
And there's
because
no...
I dismissed Ray Rivera. So like, I don't know.
And there
I told Carlin earlier, I want things to be solved. I want order in chaos. And if Ray Rivera didn't jump, if Jack Wheeler was kidnapped, like that, that's really upsetting. There is no order in chaos. What are you going to do, you know?
Yeah. And I was just going to say, there's no way you're ever going to get me to go to that ledge.
Yeah.
Well, Terry went
Don't blame
there.
Ya.
She surveilled it and was like, no, you can't. That's yeah, it.
It's pretty bizarro.
Yeah.
All right. So... yeah, now the Jack Wheeler talking about it, it does make a little more sense that it could, he could have just been having an episode and there was no foul play really involved there.
Mm-hmm. So, and we were pretty intrigued by that theory about the house across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it seems totally bonkers. Do you remember that, Joe? There was a house being built across the street from them that he was very upset about.
Yeah.
And they kind of had this theory that like he was the one that set off the smoke bombs. That's when he lost his phone. And this event kind of spiraled him into this episode.
Yeah.
He realized
the humiliation of losing his phone and knowing that everyone was going to know what he did,
mm-hmm.
I think, is what set him off. Like, this story is pretty netted out for us based on surveillance tape, which is something that we never would have had 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So like It is really interesting that we're able to say Jack Wheeler, X, Y, and Z based on surveillance tape, where this would be an unsolved mystery based on, you know, early 90s sort of, there wouldn't have been any of that. He just would have went missing. And the only thing we would have had was that he worked for the government. And the narrative would have been, who took him out?
He knew too much.
He knew too much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right, on to episode 2, A Death in Oslo. Thoughts on this one?
Carlin has thoughts.
I do too, and I want to say this. This was covered not too long ago in an episode of the podcast Trace Evidence.
Oh, okay.
With Stephen Pacheco. And again, I didn't have time to watch it a second time, but there was something he mentioned in his podcast episode that, looking in his Facebook group, there was talk that, like, the UM totally just, like, glanced over it. There was a second bullet fired in that hotel room.
Yes, Allison told us that. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, overall, the episode itself, I thought it could have been just fine if it had been on the a 10-15 minute segment on the original run. Because the episode felt like it was really drawn out and it didn't need to be.
Yeah. That was the episode where I thought to myself, couldn't we have a roster of missing people? Couldn't we solve 3 missing people instead of 1 missing person over the course of 45 minutes? Like, couldn't we compact this and make better change? Couldn't we do this instead of having this last for 45 minutes? Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that a lot of our listeners felt that way in the first series, in the first 6 episodes. I didn't feel that way, but this episode was where I was like, could we do better? Could we?
They did repeat a lot of the info in this one, and they also spent a lot of time, like, going back to that town they thought she was from, and
they could have just there said was nothing we went that came back of to that the town. Right. Yeah, they could have said we went back to the town, there was nothing there.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, they did, like, milk it a bit.
Yeah.
But as Allison said, this is a very, like, sexy segment. Like, you think, you know, like I said, I felt like it almost could have been written. Like, even the outfit she was wearing looked like a movie character. Like, it's all very mysterious and sexy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I just don't know if I have much on this, much thought on this, other than it didn't need to be drawn out the way it was. It did happen around the time that it could have gotten on the original run. It happened in 95.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too.
So
yeah. Do you have feelings on whether or not it was a murder?
No, I feel it was a suicide, just unless someone who killed her, like, went out through the window. I don't know if they really explored if that could have been a possibility, because the detail that it was double locked from the inside.
Well, what about the 2 gunshots? How do you shoot yourself twice?
The theory, the first gunshot went through the pillow. There's a theory that, I don't know why she would have done this, but there's a theory that she fired that shot first.
Like a test shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the person going to the door heard a gunshot.
Heard one.
So did that person hear? Yeah. The person heard a gunshot into a pillow, and then she subsequently took her own life?
Because there was about the 15 minute window where there was no one near the room.
which would have been plenty of time for someone to leave.
Yes.
And they also made the point to say that somebody who's working in intelligence or whatever could easily double lock a door as they go. Like, they would have a way to mess with that lock and, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I think
that I think the grip on the gun is the big tell to me that she couldn't have killed herself. Or, I mean, yeah, she couldn't.
Joe, I read that the fingerprints were wiped from the gun. Her fingerprints weren't on the gun.
Yeah.
Really?
So yes. That's...
And there was no gunshot residue.
I don't know about GSR, but I know that her fingerprints weren't on the gun that was supposed to take her own life. Like, you don't shoot yourself and then wipe your prints from the gun. So that to me was, I thought it was a suicide until I read that. And then I was like, what? No, there's no way. No way.
Yeah, also like no blood on her hands.
Yeah, that one expert said like anyone who's going to be shooting their own self in the head is going to have blood on their hands.
And they talked about like the kick from that gun.
Yes.
Like, she likely would have dropped it, but there was another theory I saw where like you could instantly have it, unless you like instantly have a death grip, then you could hold on to it. But
when they also tested it based on the fact that it was this one sort of gun, but the gun that she used was a Hungarian replica of the gun. So, like, we don't know what the kick is like. We have no idea. Like, I don't know. I thought it was a suicide immediately. Like, I want answers. But this is, it's pretty dicey. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And just like the labels being taken out of the clothing, the registration number being scratched off the gun, like.
Yes. And I love the guy being like, I am a secret assassin. This is what we do.
Yeah. He's like, this is par for the course.
What a delight.
Now, my second Facebook comment was from Casey N. It's about the case we just covered. The episode about the woman in the Oslo hotel room really got to me. I would love to know if an ancestry database could potentially help figure out who she was.
Yeah.
Similar to how they used it to solve the Golden State Killer case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had tried that up to the point of, you know, whatever they got before they released it.
Yeah. That only works as long as everyone else has inputted their own genealogical, you know, information. So
yeah. And they were saying that part of the reason that they have had trouble with it is that she has not been listed as a missing person. So
yeah,
it's just so hard to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that's even her real name.
Mm-hmm.
So
which I think, it is. I think we all believe that it's not.
Yeah.
Also, what do you make of the man who was with her?
Yeah, that's pretty mysterious. Because she had a name. They had a name on the paperwork. The gal at the desk said that there was a man standing with her. And you kind of know when someone's with someone else.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So.
And the whole thing about her being able to check in without giving any credit card info.
Yeah.
That's pretty bizarre.
But It was said in the Trace Evidence episode that they recalled it was a particularly busy night. So that can be common, that their whole thing is like, just get them checked in, send them to the room. We'll worry about it later.
Right. Yeah. Like in the interest of customer service. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
So.
Still pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's that case. So, moving on to episode 3. This is one I was talking with Carlin about.
Because Ohio.
It is Ohio, but it is, what was it? Death Row Fugitive, I believe the episode is titled.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, it does take place in Ohio, about an hour away from where I live.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it happened in Mansfield, Ohio. The original crime happened in Mansfield. And so, yeah, did you see what I was talking about? Like, when I told you, like, you're gonna wonder, like, how the fuck does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So,
how does someone get furloughed to buy Christmas presents? Yeah.
It's truly wild.
Everyone's wondering how that happened. Yeah.
Yeah, like the quote from that one guy, he was like, from what we know now, that's the last person we would release out onto the streets. Like, these people are almost always reoffenders, and they had them just out doing their thing.
Like, I mean, was it a reactionary, I don't know, was it a reactionary response to all of these people being condemned to life in prison and people wanting to believe that they wouldn't reoffend? So opening these doors to let them out a little bit? Like, we were very naive at that time. We didn't mm-hmm. understand what a reoffender was. We didn't realize that if you got busted for pot, you probably wouldn't reoffend. But if you sexually assaulted someone, you probably would, right? Yeah. So, like, were we living in a gray area where we didn't truly understand what motivated people to commit the crimes that they committed?
Yeah.
And he, as I said in the episode, he also had a charm, but he was able to charm the prison guards.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like a Ted Bundy-esque thing where, and this was originally a story I heard a couple of years ago. It was a local news, like a anniversary news story
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago. And I remember reading that dude, he was sentenced to death. They abolished the death penalty, so it was commuted to life. And then he's allowed to just have like a 2 to 3 hour window to just shop by himself at a mall.
It's absolute insanity. Someone who murdered a child with a brick was allowed to just have some time to himself.
Who thought he murdered a child by smothering or strangling her and then revisited her as she's dying in an alley and then murdered her.
He shot her the first time, but yeah. Like, yeah.
Came back, investigated, realized she's still alive, and then bludgeons her to death. Like, what?
And this is 8 years later. He's just... Yeah. Allowed to
part
go Christmas
of the
shopping.
Christmas shopping buying team.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And it's 1 year removed from the death penalty being removed.
Insanity.
I think it was like a really, God. And we didn't know what we know now. We didn't know about criminal behavior
mm-hmm.
in a way that we know about it now, casually, where we roll our eyes and we're like, how could you not have known? But there are people that should be released. We overpopulate prisons for crimes that aren't like this.
Yes.
But people like this get tossed in the tumble and they're able to be released to go Christmas shopping.
Yeah. And they said that was part of the intent of this program, was like the prison overpopulation and like rehabbing prisoners to be ready for regular life. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he's not that category of person.
The room, like,
yeah,
did you get busted with pot, or did you get busted murdering a child?
Let's focus on those weed cases, okay?
Exactly. It's like, oh my God,
it's so infuriating. And the poor family, like, to know that he's back out on the streets and nobody knows where, like, just
and to know that his family is protecting him.
Yeah,
like his father being like, "Well, I believe in forgiveness." You don't get to believe in forgiveness. That's not up to you.
Yeah.
You don't get to decide forgiveness or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in your wheelhouse. You don't get to do that.
Yeah.
It's up to the victim's family to decide forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Do you love your son? Great. Did he murder someone? Not great. Like, you don't get to decide.
That's one thing they didn't really tell us, was if the family believed he really did that or not. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, I'm not.
I mean, they interviewed her sister, though. Her sister was pretty firm. She was like, this person's a murderer. She murdered my sister.
No, I know. I mean his family.
Oh, no. Well, why would they talk? They know exactly where he is.
Yeah.
They don't want to comment.
Yeah. Anyway, an infuriating case. But when we were discussing this, we felt that this one might be the most solvable.
Yes.
Yes. And speaking of which, there was a recent article that came out after the episode's release. It's a little update. It's basically saying their feelings about how solvable it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a quote from U.S. Marshal Brian Fitzgibbon, which I believe he's the one in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, he gave this quote to USA Today. He's alive. I feel we're getting closer. There's nothing putting him in a place. We're looking for any information to his life on the run or the history of his life on the run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Allison read that to us as well. And it just seems like he's probably still in the States. Like, I don't think he even probably left the country. He's out
there. Between the last time they saw him and the next time they saw him, he was like 30 miles away. He is centrally located. He is somewhere in California, and we are going to find him. Mm-hmm. This is the ultimate case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is what we all do. It's why we wake up in the morning and we get on the social media networks and we're so excited. It's because of that. Someone is going to find him.
Yeah.
And that will be the case that's solved. It will be. It will be.
We have
all of the others.
We have so many photos of him. This age progression isn't as different as like a child, for example, to an adult.
And all he does is lay low, but he plays the same role. Like, we're going to find him, you know? You don't have to put out a reward. You don't need information. You just need to know where he is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Alonzo Brooks. It's not like Lena Chapin. It's like, just where is he? Point us in that direction and we'll find him.
Yeah. Like, who besides his family doesn't want to turn the stick bitch in, you know?
Yeah. Like, you can't stay on the run forever. You're old, you're tired, and you look exactly like your composite.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah, so how old would he be?
I think they said in his 50s.
Yeah.
No. He'd be much older.
I think like late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, okay.
He'd be in his like mid to late 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Send him in.
No, we will find him.
I do believe that out of the 12 episodes, he's the most likely to be found.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the sexiest case to solve, but I think we've got him faster than we've got anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most solvable one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everyone. Due to the length of our discussion, I decided to split the episode into two parts. So thank you for listening to part one, and stay tuned because part two will be out on Thursday this week. Take care, everyone, and I'll talk to you then.